This is Jonah Hill, and you're listening to the only podcast that matters.
Bro gang, we are joined by the Adidas Admiral, native of Darwin and author of On the Origin of Spezial, the Trainer Titan, the Krep Kaiser, the Don Dada of Deadstock, Raja of References, the Archive King, the Matchmaking Mara, Trabs for Me Lads, the Gum Soul Geezer, the King of Casuals, the Acid House Head Honcho, founder of brand consulting agency Darwin Design, and chief curator of Adidas Spezial, Gary Aspen. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little bit worried about the King of Casuals title you just threw at me then. There's a lot of people better qualified for that title than I am.
Who is your King of Casuals if you had to anoint someone?
A guy called Derek Turnbull from Blackburn.
Oh, yeah?
So we're just ignorant yanks, right?
What's he up to now? What's Derek up to?
Derek Turnbull, I think, works fitting people's alarms at their houses because he's an expert in security.
Is he doing it in head-to-toe CP company?
He was at the private view last night, and I actually introduced him to Paul Harvey, and that was quite an interesting conversation hear.
Because sure.
Yeah, he was the first person I saw wearing a Millie jacket back in the, probably around 1989, which he'd procured on one of his many trips over to Switzerland.
A master of acquisitions.
Just sightseeing.
A master of acquiring things.
It got to a stage in the early 90s where if you were under the age of 25 and you had a Blackburn passport and you were coming into Manchester Airport from Switzerland, you were getting pulled over because it was such a big subculture here of working class kids traveling to Switzerland and Austria and Germany, basically for Adidas trainers and designer clothing.
Down. Yeah.
Just to hunt down the Johns.
They were hunting and gathering.
Yeah,
very much so. I mean, it's kind of, in some ways, it was the 1980s and there was this kind of, Mrs. Thatcher was the prime minister and there was a recession and they were always pushing this kind of entrepreneurial spirit.
Yes.
And,
Blame the politicians.
So these youths from the Northwest certainly took that on board and went out and made it their own. And it was,
real rovers.
Yeah, well, it's funny because we did a panel talk in London last week and they were asking me about the stockists that I got CP from in the late 80s. And I'm like, there's this guy's attic who lives a few streets from me. He had so much of it up there. But,
an undercover Bobby asking?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, the thing is, places like Switzerland and Austria, the trainers would be out in pairs. So it was just like, and you could get these things called Interrail tickets, which cost about £120 at the time. And you could just go to the local post office and get a passport for £7, which was almost like a paper passport, put a photo in it and, go off around Europe for a month.
Yeah,
ride the rails, baby.
Yeah, and so, that was very kind of... No, what's the word? I suppose
entrepreneurial.
Entrepreneurial, but also kind of, these places were exotic. Kids are coming from
working class kids.
Yeah, working class kids in an industrial area that is now a post-industrial area, because the 80s is when all the kind of industry and the manufacturing started to close down in these places. So there's post-industrial towns all over the UK that are similar to Darwin and Blackburn.
Speaking of which, thank you so much for hosting us in your hometown of Darwin.
No problem.
The first thing we want to do, Gary, is a little fit check where you are going to walk the audience at home through the totality of your outfit. The choice for you is, do you want to start top down or do you want to start bottom up with the trainers?
I can go bottom up with the trainers.
That is a correct answer.
There's only one correct answer.
The trainers are... These are a prototype sample of Spezial that are an unreleased sample.
Oh, wow.
So then I'm wearing...
It's good to be the king.
Burlington socks, which are Preston Burlington socks. I've been wearing Burlington socks since the 80s. Then I've got a pair of vintage Levi's. I've got a T-shirt under here, which is the charity t-shirt that's been done for the CP exhibition in Darwin, which is
there's a huge line for those the other night.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys raised a lot of money.
So these are to raise money for a local charity to build up that's setting up a new
hall. Good thing we didn't ask for free ones. We would have looked like real assholes.
No, they're setting
arseholes.
There's a big problem with youth homelessness here. So they're setting up a new hostel. So this t-shirt's from that, and that's underneath my CP company sweatshirt.
Of course.
And then this little gilet I'm wearing is also Italian by a brand called Brunello Cucinelli.
Oh, we're familiar.
So, it's a little fancy.
You could have it as a treat, you know.
Yeah. And this is a cashmere Burberry scarf.
I see a GMT on there, right?
Yeah, there's a Rolex.
A Coke GMT. What year is that from?
Do you know what? I ought to know that, but I'm not a watch train spotter. I got this from a guy called James Dowling.
Not a watcher.
Yeah.
Who is a watch train spotter. Right. He wrote an amazing book about Rolex.
Okay.
And I've got a friend in London, a guy called Michael Koppelman, who has been, he's been the guy that's distributed Stussy for Europe since the 80s. And he works with Supreme, and he's a guy that brought Bathing Ape to the UK.
Oh, so this guy's like, he's a legend.
But he's a very understated legend.
If you know, as we say.
Yeah, Michael's a man. And Michael introduced me to James. James is this kind of wealthy old English gentleman that lives in Hampstead. And I wanted a Rolex for my 40th. So Michael's like, speak to James. And he said, look, take this and wear it for a week and
see how it feels. Like, out for a spin.
You're sure?
But he knew I would come back.
Did you? Did it bring up old feelings? Maybe.
Yeah.
You know,
No. I was never one of those guys. So I bought that for my 40th, which apparently has gone up quite dramatically in value now.
Absolutely, sir.
And my cap is a Spezial cap. The haircuts by Tyler Johnson.
Tyler Johnson.
Yeah. There you
God. And can't forget, what are the panties?
Yeah, the underwear.
The underwear, what is it today? It's
boxers.
Boxers, yeah.
Brand unknown.
No, it is a known brand, but I can't even remember the name of it. I've been buying Ralph boxers again recently.
Oh, yeah?
I always wear boxers.
When you say, that's a win for the boxer boys over here, when you say vintage, like what qualifies as vintage to you? Because we were talking to Nigel Caborn, and he was saying it has to be from like, the 60s is the earliest before he can qualify.
Not
vintage.
20 years or whatever.
Well, he's a lot older than me, so he can say what he likes.
He's like 20 years. You're a senior, I would say.
Well, it's funny because
he inspired Austin Powers.
I bought a CP an Explorer by CP company recently, and I had an Explorer. I've had a couple of Explorers, but this one was particularly won me over, and it was from a guy called Ollie who does Too Hot, which is where he sells a lot of vintage brands, particularly CP company, and it's like, you know, it's 2007, and it's like so it's like a vintage CP jacket, and I'm like 2007 feels like about 2 minutes ago to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The 90s feel about 2 minutes ago to me, but I have to put that in context because, you know, when I was going out clubbing to the Hacienda in 1988. I was 18 years old. If someone had come to me and said, like, harking on about how good it was in 1978, I'd have been like, get out of here. I'm not like,
Mick Jagger.
Yeah, that's like a million miles away. You know, 1968, I wasn't even born, you know, like, so 20 years to me now seems like, early 2000s, you know. Yeah, it's weird what time does, isn't it? But vintage, you know, I mean, these are, I mean, I just go to the Levi place in London, and I always get them tapered at the bottom here. And
you've got to show off the trainers. You can't have too much pooling, you know?
That's it. Especially not with running shoes.
Yeah, right.
I believe that is a complete fit check.
Yes.
Gary, there you go.
Let's get into the meat and potatoes. Let's get to the meat pie of the pod, if you will. We had a delicious meat pie up the road at the Tea Shop Cafe.
Yeah.
There you go.
Smacking.
Love to support local businesses.
Our time here in the UK, up in the north mainly, is coming to an end. You know, we are going to go to the pub later today to celebrate a successful week with our boy Enrico, the original Gabagool.
Shout out Enrico.
Front and center in the Darwin Library Theater.
Yeah, we finally are potting in front of an audience. This is like a live show for one.
What we want to know from you is, what is the best fit for us to wear to the pub? And let me just say, we asked this of Goldie, and he said that wearing what we wear now, we look like two fucking cops.
Yeah.
We get our asses whipped if we showed up looking like this.
He also said that it didn't matter what we wear just because of how we look.
Yeah. No, you'd be all right. You'd struggle with the footwear though, guys.
Yeah.
You'd struggle with the footwear. That is definitely not northern footwear that you're wearing.
The fancy like, Camion boots.
Yeah.
And the kind of the elasticated Chelsea boots. No way.
We need some trainers.
Yeah.
We need some Spezial.
Yeah. Adidas trainers for sure.
Yeah, we'll give you dress.
Size 10, size 9.
Some nice suede shoes. You know what I mean? But definitely not Chelsea boots. Definitely not anything slip on. No way. And stay away from anything basketball related.
Okay,
really?
Sure.
No one does basketball shoes in this part of the world, apart from students.
No Jordans.
Yeah.
No J's. What about everything else though? The big pants, like he's in the jeans, I'm in the big pants. Like,
no, you're all right with that. You know, he'd get a bit of respect for the Neil Young t-shirt. Okay. That's for sure.
I was wearing mine yesterday, but I had
because one thing about Tony Wilson the guy who was the kind of founder of Factory Records, you know, he used to talk about kids from Manchester having the best record collections. And that's a similar story around here, really. You know,
not that
people kind of care about record collections like they used to do. You know, to me, I used to go around to people's houses and it was almost like the measure of the man.
Sure.
Let's see what you got here. Do you know what I mean? Where now it's like everyone's got everything because it's Spotify.
Sting,
whatever.
What the fuck? No. Sting. Gary, you founded a thriving subline within the Adidas footwear umbrella in Spezial.
Mm.
But at the same time, you claim to not be a sneakerhead. How are those two things? Like, how do those butt heads?
Yeah.
Well, it's a very different culture with the Adidas culture in the UK. Sneakerheads, it's like, first of all, the term sneaker is an American term.
Sure. And trainers.
It's rooted in American culture. Sneaker culture in America really is rooted in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
It's fair to say.
And so
in the UK, the subculture that followed football is, you know, they embraced tennis shoes, they embraced hiking shoes, they embraced flat gum soles,
handball shoes.
But the thing with handball shoes, that's part of the reason why we christened the line Spezial.
Right.
Because I remember going to a small independent sports shop around 1983 after school, and they just got these bright blue suede shoes with the gum sole and three white stripes with Spezial written on the side. And you know, they were gobbled up by kids around here, you know, that had never
seen handball ever, right?
Yeah, they didn't even know what handball was. Right. And that's the sort of philosophy that underpins what I do with Spezial, is this idea that these things were designed for a purpose and a function, but they are adopted and repurposed and recontextualized by kids who make them their own.
Right.
And so, you know, like Adidas used the term Spezial for a lot of specialist sports shoes. Mm-hmm. But like I said, handball has no relevance in Lancashire.
Right.
Very, very, there'll be somebody out there going, well, actually, it does to me.
There'll be that one guy out there.
But you
playing handball with not any of your friends.
But they sold bucket loads of shoes that were designed to be worn for handball. When I say I'm not a sneakerhead, you know,
But you're talking about the American phenomenon of people that are just like hoarding, buying every shoe
and the hype cycle.
And also, you know, like I joined Adidas in the late 90s. I was buying dead stock shoes through the 90s. I've started wearing trainers.
Dead stock.
Trainers through the sort of from the late 70s through the 80s.
Wow.
And you know, like I've watched this thing.
This phenomenon.
Become a phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in the 80s, I remember going to fashion college and I designed these kind of anoraks and I put trainers on my fashion illustrations. This was in 1988. The lecturers thought I was from another planet. Do you know what I mean? But I was designing based on what I was seeing going on around me. Because the only people that wore trainers in the 1980s were kind of like hip hop kids and football casuals,
like b-boys.
I was a b-boy, in the early 80s, but the b-boying thing died out in the UK in 86. Anyone that tells you it didn't die out in 86 is
there was a brief window.
It died and then it reemerged in the early 90s because the Germans kind of kept the thing alive. And one of the guys I used to dance with, a guy called Evo, he when we all got into raving and acid house, he got into kickboxing and he stayed super fit. He was a little younger than us. And so when he came back out dancing, he used to dance with a crew called Street Machine from Manchester.
That's the best crew, right? In your opinion?
Street Machine set the template for modern b-boying.
Right.
Like, and anyone who knows anything about b-boying knows, of course, it came from New York. Of sure. course, it came from the Rocksteady crew. But all the stuff that kind of happened with the power moves, mm-hmm. that was Street Machine.
Can you still, what are your moves like now?
Yeah.
I still got flavor and style, yeah. but my lower back's a little short these days. But
you need your son to like maybe get the spin started for you.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, the term sneakerhead, it kind of like pigeonholes you into this thing of like, you know, the resale thing. What I don't like about sneaker culture, if I can call it that nowadays,
of course.
Is the fact that it's become purely an exercise in commerciality.
100%.
It's stock trading.
The value of the product is based on its financial value. Mm-hmm. Where actually, for me, there's in life, there's ways to get paid outside of money.
Sure.
And for me, I like the idea of people interacting with product and engaging with product and having experiences with product.
Right.
You know, I have those memories of that Armani sweater I had in 1987. Yeah, yeah. And when I walked into the pub and all my friends kind of gave me props for wearing it. Those things matter. And that's one of the things I love about Special is that
when I go
to watch football, people are wearing it.
Yeah, yeah.
They're engaging with
it. It's not in a box in a closet.
Yes, it's desirable. But, you know, when I hear about, the KPIs are based on what the resale value was, that doesn't make something valuable to me. The mindset I come from was you wanted that pair of shoes that other people didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Where now it's become kind of pigeonholed into this kind of, there's a kind of six must-have shoes.
Sure.
And if you don't have one of those shoes, and it kind of, I don't know. And I may sound old saying that. I don't care if I do, but that's the mindset that I come from. Do you know what I mean? It's that thing of finding that shoe in that color that other people don't have, and people going, whoa, what are those you're wearing?
Do you think there's ways to fix these issues in sneaker culture where it is such a financial mechanism, or is it kind of just hoping that people shift values
to more about
sentimentality versus financial
gain? I think that's going to exist, and it's going to continue to exist. There's no question about that. It's big, it's a juggernaut.
Yeah.
But within that, what I don't like is the way that it gets kind of, there's this kind of very globalized version of what sneaker culture is, when actually it's multifaceted. I love
still regional.
Yeah, regional is exactly that. You know, one of the things that I find interesting is localized fashions.
Yeah.
And I think we all do. You know, what do you want to do? Travel to every major city in the world and it's just the exact same stores there.
Yeah.
And if you look at all the stores that actually have real kudos and meaning, they seem to have strong localized identities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, roots. Yeah.
Look at Supreme. Supreme, it's like they really play on the whole New York thing, you know, or you know, like Acne in Scandinavia, or look at, you know, Visvim in Tokyo. Like they really play on these strong localized identities. And I love localized subcultures. That doesn't mean I don't like somebody else's culture.
Right, right.
I just like celebrating that, you know, these pockets of culture.
Realness,
you know, I think what you guys witnessed last night in Darwin is a very different experience to a lot of kind of brand openings or brand exhibitions that are populated by people who describe themselves as influencers.
I've never seen an event like that in New York. You don't see that.
There was nobody in there last night that would call themselves an influencer. There was nobody in there last night that cares about having a huge social media following or how many likes they get.
There was a moment where a bunch of blokes were gathering, and I think they brought your son in. They were like singing a football song or something, and like getting a huge group photo, not a selfie. And we were like, "Yo, this is fucking sick!" Should we jump in there?
Not influencers, but people who are influential.
Yeah, but the thing is, they don't care about that stuff. They don't. They're into their thing.
Yeah,
it's like, this is our culture. This is our thing. This is
like a family.
I want
to ask about the super regional culture that we're, you know, guests of currently. But when you're curating and designing for Special, how do you walk the line of like honoring football culture with the references and everything without, and the history, without sort of fetishizing it and making it like, I don't know, giving it too much, putting it on too much of a pedestal?
Yeah.
Well, if you look at every film that I've done for Special, I never overtly reference football. I mean, we've used a football player for the CP collaboration. That's
Luke
first,
Shaw, right?
Yeah, Luke Shaw. That's the first time I think there's been anything that overtly references football. I mean, the last Special film I did was with John Power with an original piece of folk music playing in Abbey Road Studios with a kind of a guy wandering around the Cotswolds having an out-of-body experience mm-hmm. with a folk music soundtrack. Right. Like, how do you explain that that appeals to football fans?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the thing, you know, the way I look at it is I just don't do things that offend football fans. Mm-hmm. I just present something that's aspirational. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't like it when I'm in Adidas meetings and they go, oh, you know, on Spezial for the terrace customer.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, well, Blondie McCoy wears Spezial.
Yeah.
And Gareth Skewis from Palace wears Spezial. And like, you know, like somebody from Adidas said Jerry Lorenzo requested a bunch of Spezial shoes this season. And it's kind of like, you know, I like the idea that people take it and make it their own.
Right.
So if skateboarders wear Spezial, I'm good with that.
Yeah. Sure.
At the same time, if football casuals wear Spezial, I'm good with that too. You know, going back to what we were saying about sneakerheads versus
sneaker culture.
I don't describe myself as a sneakerhead. I'm somebody that's worked with Adidas who's ended up with an Adidas collection. The people that are Adidas collectors in this country, on the whole, there's the odd guy, like there's one guy from North Manchester called Degsy, who's got an amazing vintage Adidas collection, who's been getting vintage Pumas recently.
Okay.
But like, it's a different mindset because it's kind of like when you're chasing down vintage shoes, it's like people who they're connoisseurs.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, you know, that shoe is not necessarily going to have a high value on StockX.
Right.
It's just that one of one shoe that was made in Yugoslavia in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, but it's a very select group of people. But yeah. It's quite a sophisticated.
It's a fraternity.
It's a sophisticated audience. And these guys are connoisseurs. They know the product really well. And it's not about the must-have hyped up shoe. It's
right.
about, you know, oh wow, there's a pair of Adidas leisure yeah. shoes there that like I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm
specific
gonna...
things that move their heart and mind. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, a lot of those like sneakerheads to me are people that don't necessarily have a loyalty to any particular brand. Although saying that, a lot of sneakerheads have big loyalty towards our friends over in America with the swoosh.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't even, whatever. No. I think I've seen that before.
You know yeah. them guys. Yeah.
yeah.
But, you know, like in the UK, you have this, I think you've got the highest concentration of Adidas collectors in the world. Even, you know, you've got, and there are pockets of it all over in Germany. There's, you know, guys like Quart and, you know, that there's people over there that are collecting and in Russia and, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like UK, Northern Europe thing. And it's not driven by basketball culture,
mm-hmm.
you know, like when I was a B-boy in the early 80s, you couldn't get Adidas superstars here. So I meet people sometimes, they go, yo, I was there back in the day rocking my shell toes. And I'm like, no, you weren't. Because if you think you had shell toes back in the day, nobody had
shell toes. You said you didn't see, I watched a video, you said you didn't see a pair of shell toes until like in the 90s, right?
Or, no, it was the late 80s. The first time I saw them in the flesh was a shop called Geese in Manchester. And they were bringing them in. I mean, everyone talks about Duffer St. George bringing superstars into the UK, but Steve Caton at Geese in Manchester was bringing them in as well. And they were the Run DMC collaboration, and that was the first time I saw a pair in the flesh, although I'd seen many videos
of
you know, US graffiti
Beastie
writers
Boys and you know
yeah and so and we, DMC, you know yeah. we'd seen all that, but to us in the UK, B-boys in the UK, Gazelle,
right,
Adidas Gazelles were
that was like
were,
your shell toe.
That was yeah. the go-to shoe.
Yeah
that was the yeah
when you were first developing Spezial at Adidas,
yes,
did you ever think or hope that it would develop such a crazy cult following?
I could never even imagine that would happen, really. It was, you know...
Did you have a moment where it kind of hit you where you're like, oh shit, this guy's have like some juice?
It has legs.
Well, sometimes, yeah. I mean, I had a situation, a funny one was like, because it originally started, it was a... Because Adidas didn't ask for me to create the mod trefoil.
Mm.
That was based on a graphic that was on a sweater that on an image of Adi Dassler, and I basically kind of like tweaked that graphic. And when you do a graphic, the the Adidas legal team need to know where your references are. Sure. When I showed them what the references are, they're going, that's a Deutschland Football Association. We've had a relationship with them for 70 years. So, like, you can't do this. So I had to go back to the drawing board.
The suits, man. The guy
Red tape. Yeah, but it's cool. But you know, I mean, they're protecting their brand more. Everybody has to. So I went away and played with it and put the sort of reflection of these three triangles underneath it. And it's like, wow, it looks like a modernist version of the trefoil. Yeah. And some Liverpool supporters took that, put it on a banner, and took it to all their European games.
Oh, wow.
And that was the first season. So then other fans, Liverpool fans are still influential. You know, they're off on their own tangent. Liverpool always has its own version of, like, you know, you can spot young Liverpool heads, long hair, technical outdoor clothing, John heads, cat wigs.
Yeah. But, you don't know if they're going camping or going to kill you, right?
Yeah. So they took this banner around Europe, and then we took a Spezial exhibition to Moscow. Mm. So we're in Moscow, and these guys come up to me, huge Russian guys come up to me and say, we are the CSKA Ultras. We would like to make a banner using your graphic in our team colors. And I'm like, do whatever you want, guys. I'm cool with that. I'm absolutely fine with it.
Sure thing, boys. I can't believe they even asked you.
Go off, Kings.
But it was cool. They were respectful. Yeah. And then they said, and we would like you to come to football as a guest of the CSKA Ultras, right? Wow. So I'm like, I'm a long way from home here. Sure. I'm in Moscow. So I say to the guy from Adidas, I'm like, what do I do here?
Yeah.
And he was like, you have to go.
You have to go.
Our legal team can't protect you.
Yeah. They love your products. You cannot disrespect them.
Sure.
You have to go. So I'm doing interviews at the exhibition on the Monday afternoon, and then these guys turn up and I get in the car with them.
They put a bag over your head.
And I'm like, no. And I'm like, before you go anywhere, I just want to be clear. I'm not a football hooligan.
Right.
Can we just get this straight before we go? Like taking some English hooligan out of you. And they were like, we're not hooligans, we're ultras. They're like, the hooligans are a different thing here. And like in Russia, they're guys who like train for kickboxing. It's a whole different ball game. And so, you know, I went to the game with them, and it was an amazing experience. I mean, I spent the first 45 minutes just doing selfies with all these Russian guys. You know what I mean?
Did they make you get tattoos on your knees and shit?
No tattoos. I don't have a tattoo on my body, I'm pleased to say. But they were super cool, and it was a good experience, because the football there, it felt much more like football used to feel here. You know, like
more raw.
Yeah, it was raw. Where people weren't, it felt like it almost used to feel when it was football terraces,
now where it's more commercial.
Yeah, because I mean, now the Premier League is like, I've got friends of mine who are like, guys who've been casuals for years, and they started going watching non-league football.
Because
they can have a beer while they're watching the game, and it's kind of.
We went to the Champions League match, Man U versus Villarreal, and you can't drink.
Yeah, and it's just a
sucked.
Yeah, it's kind of
it's it was an amazing match.
It's a whole sober. Yeah, it's a very different thing to what it was I was growing up.
It's literally sobering.
Yeah, it was a working class thing. You know, as a kid, my dad used to drag me along to watch Blackburn Rovers, where you've noticed the weather here, it perpetually rains.
Yeah.
And it would be like the longest 90 minutes of my life. I used to have to take the
sportswear.
The washing up ball out of the sink, because I couldn't see over the wall to watch the game,
and I'd stand on it
on my tiptoes, just getting rained on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Brutal.
But it was, it was very different then. And there's some things about modern football that are great, and there's other things about that have been lost.
That moment in Russia where you were a long way from home, but people are coming up to you asking to, use your work. Is that when it hit you?
Holy shit.
Like, we got one, boys.
This thing's going to work out.
Maybe, because I mean, what's interesting about Russia is the price of Gary's going up. They're far more interested in British style than they are in American style. Americans.
Well, except when blue jeans, helped defeat communism. Yeah. That was kind of cool.
But it's like, like hip hop's become the driving force in global culture. Yeah, there's no question about that.
It's the leading cultural art form, but it's
a music driven culture. Mm-hmm. Casual culture in the UK is like, you know, it's very difficult to explain that to people. You know, like, how do you explain, you know, like, I remember, like, especially speaking to American people, sure. because there's not a lot of things within American culture that are comparable to it.
Right. Not
you at know,
all.
Like, for me, casual culture, it's like, it's the attitude of punk mm-hmm. coupled with the sensibility of mod.
Yeah.
So sure. it's like clean living under difficult conditions, mm-hmm. which is, you know, which is the same mindset as kids in the Bronx wanting to wear gold chains yes. or whatever, but it's much more kind of understated here. It's much more subtle. It's much more nuanced mm-hmm. than, you know, but funny, I remember interviewing Ken Swift from the Rocksteady Crew in the late 90s. One of my kind of child, like, well, he was one of my heroes when right. I was a B-boy. I mean, Kenny is...
He's know, up
the,
there.
The, he's yeah, for me, he's the ultimate B-boy, him, you know.
The king.
And I remember meeting Kenny and interviewing him and talking. And I was like, why did Adidas and Puma become as popular as they did in the US? And he was like, because they were European, they felt they felt sophisticated yeah, sure. to us.
Aspirational.
Yeah.
Aspirational. And that was my mindset with Spezial.
Right.
I was like, you know what? I've the tonality of this, everything about this, the brand identity of it, I want it to be super European.
Sophisticated.
Just to have that, you know, and so like I looked at, because I was in all these meetings when we were talking about doing Spezial. I was in these meetings and I'm going, yeah, we need a premium archive line that's kind of, you know, and it needs to have a strong brand identity. And then eventually they went, okay, then go do it.
Yeah.
And I went, like, oh, fuck. And I came out of the room and I went, what does strong brand identity even, what does that even mean? But the thing I...
When corporate speak backfires.
But then I was like, you know what? I was born in Bull Hill Hospital in Darwin in 1969.
Good year.
And I grew up in a two-bedroom terrace house. My dad worked in a mill. My mum worked on the markets. It was a working class environment. Mm-hmm. And everything that I do that informs everything I do, my identity, that's what formed my identity. And so I took that philosophy and applied that to Adidas. Mm. It's a German brand. It was born out of Germany. And I looked at, you know, the philosophy of Adidasler. And, you know, when I first joined Adidas, they used to say to me, if you're ever in doubt, ask yourself, what would Adi have done? Mm. And it's a good kind of, it's a good yardstick for what's right for Adidas to be doing and what isn't right for Adidas to be doing. And, you know, like Spezial was a kind of, you know, it was born out of the fact that in the UK, you know, some of the collaborations they were doing that were working really well in some of the other territories were not resonating right. here because of this subculture that is so entrenched here. You know, which Adidas and CP company.
Why do you think the Adidas Spezial and the CP company collaboration, why did that make sense in your head?
Well, I've worked on a lot of collaborations for Adidas. You know, some of the stuff that I've worked on now in hindsight, you can see how not only was it influential within Adidas, but it was influential within the sports industry as a whole. Hmm. So like back in 2003, I did a Bathing Ape collaboration,
right. Talk your shit,
which
man.
I was very instrumental in getting mm-hmm. off the ground. But the reason that collaboration was as strong as it was is because it was underpinned by a genuine relationship. And so there was a trust there. Mm. It wasn't, hey, you're cool.
Right.
Hey, we're cool.
Let's make some money together.
It was
what you see today.
Well,
right?
Of course. Yeah. Like, collabs that make zero sense.
Yeah. Whereas every collaboration I've worked on, and I've worked on quite a few.
How many you think? Like,
oh, God knows. I mean, 50. You know, I worked on the
100.
I don't know. I mean, no, I'm not nowhere near that number, but the ones I have worked on have mattered.
Yeah. Sure. There you go.
So like, you know, like matter. For example, the 35th anniversary of the Superstar,
right.
I was at that point heading up Adidas's entertainment
right.
team. And, you know, I put forward the idea of doing Consortium mm-hmm. and Consortium still exists to this yeah. day. And Consortium, I was saying to them, look, the people that are holding these small independent boutiques have as much influence as a lot of celebrities do right. and right. start. Why don't we start partnering with them and doing small runs? That at the time in 2005, that was like,
no one did that.
Like, yeah, because if you were going to do a special colorway, it needed to be for thousands of units right. for a big chain. And so to do that, it was like, that was, you know, that was kind of visionary stuff. Now that's kind of standardized.
It's, a norm,
it's what
yeah.
everybody in the yeah, industry yeah. does. So there was a Consortium and then there was a music series and I was heading up the entertainment thing. But it was like, what are we going to do here? We're going to do just a bunch of people from hip hop culture? Or are we going to show how the Superstar touched lots of different areas of culture, British guitar music, American rock, dance music with Underworld, you know, like, so, you know, they're all, to me, they're, I'm very proud of a lot of the work I've done because I think a lot of it still stands up.
Yeah.
And this CP company, Adidas Spezial collaboration, it was born out of a genuine relationship.
Right, right.
So like a few years ago, Adidas worked with CP company on a previous collaboration and there'd been discussions about that being with Spezial, you know, and Lorenzo really wanted to make it with Spezial, but then the, you know, for various reasons, it ended up kind of being done just as an Adidas original.
Proper, yeah.
Collaboration, yeah. You know, and it was Paul Harvey was wearing one of the jackets last night. Mm. This to me was like a dream to work on Adidas Spezial and CP company together because one, it was underpinned by genuine relationships.
Of course.
You know, Lorenzo's a friend, Enrico's a friend, you know, like, and I'm a fan of their brand.
Right.
I know their brand.
You wear it, you own it, you collect
so,
it.
So to work with them on this collaboration, it was, yeah, it's legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's bona fide. There's so much fake stuff out there now.
Yeah.
You can, you know, like people living their lives on their phone screens and that, you know, like what we did last night, that was an experience for people. It's a moment. Exactly. And that'll stay with people.
Sure.
So to do this collaboration, I was like, you know, this is like a dream for me.
You're still beside yourself.
And this has got to be good. You know, this has got to be good.
Can't fuck up.
Since your entire hometown is like watching you.
Yeah, but it was also about being respectful of their design language and being tying in with the fact it was their 50th anniversary.
Right.
So when it came to doing the jacket, CP company had to make some concessions. And when it came to doing the shoes, I had to make some concessions.
Right.
But because there was... Sorry?
Push and pull with them.
Yeah, yeah, because...
Give and take.
Yeah, so like with the jacket, Paul Harvey originally talked about wanting to do something like a four pocket based on M65. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, but the M65 is an American military jacket. And the design language of Spezial is really more rooted in European stuff.
Right.
And one of the jackets that I've created in Spezial is the Haslingdon jacket, which is based on a British Lakeland walking jacket from the 1970s. It's like, that was the foundation of where that jacket came from. So I was like, if we're going to do a four pocket jacket, I would like to do it, the foundation of it to be a Haslingdon, but then to see where we can, we use CP fabrics, we put a CP liner into it, and then we look where else we can find ways. So it's like, it's got a detachable hood.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use a classic CP hood on there. Let's put the lens in there dual brand the lens and then put that little cheeky sort of pocket, the seam zip pocket on the sleeve. So it's like, it's a genuine kind of mix of the two brands.
Yeah, right.
And the camo that we used is an Italian camo from the 1970s. So it goes back to the 50-year story. And then with the footwear, I wanted to do...
It's a very Italian-looking shoe.
I wanted to do the Adidas Winterhill SPZL, which is a shoe that you know, I've done a few versions of in Spezial because, you know, it's a very winterized kind of, you know, heavy... It's not heavy to
robust.
Wear.
So you need
it's
that,
robust.
You need that.
That's the word. That's the word. Robust. Thank
I'm a
you
professional.
For that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that.
No worries, guys. Free
and,
one.
We'll
invoice you.
But then, you know, they and like I'm sort of like with Paul Harvey, I'm like, you know far more about military jackets, outerwear, workwear than I ever will.
Yeah.
You
I don't know if anyone knows more than Paul Harvey.
But when it comes to Adidas trainers, he's like, Gary.
That's you.
Yeah. Like,
tap in, bro.
Like, yeah. So like, you know, it's like you say, it's that give and take thing. So I was pushing to do the Winterhill and then it was like, it came back from CP company. We want to do an Italia one because of the name of the shoe, obviously. Two, because it was a shoe that originally came out in 1971, so it fits in perfectly with the 50th anniversary. And the previous Adidas Italia reissues, you know, like I thought we can improve it.
Yeah.
Which is what I do a lot of the time with Spezial. I've gone back to certain things that have been reissued previously. You know, like I'm very much about getting the specifications right. If you're going to bring something back. And so I got several versions of the Italia from around that Because I've got a couple of versions. Sure. I've got a friend called Digger who's got an incredible, Digger Das. He's got an incredible, incredible vintage Adidas collection. Yeah. So he pulled a couple of his out. And we also got to shoot a Made in France Adidas ROM, which had the kind of plastic piece on the top of the tongue, which was a feature that was used on a few Made in France models around that time, like the Adidas Newcomb had that on as well. And so, and it had this weird mix of it had the sort of the plastic piece on the top of the tongue, and then it had this like these like flock stripes. So I was like, let's kind of try and kind of do something that sits somewhere between a classic Italia and this amazing Made in France ROM, and then bring the Italian colors into it and then the dual branding, and we have something really interesting here. And the thing about it is people go, well, they're releasing a white shoe in October. It's not the time of year to be doing that. But it's like, that's a 50-year-old shoe and it still looks incredible.
Sure.
And its design is as valid as a brogue or a desert boot. And that's the beauty of Adidas's design language.
Classic.
Yeah. You know,
timeless.
Yeah. Well, that was Paul Harvey's idea about putting an extra set of outsoles in there.
Yeah.
Because he was like, let's put an extra set of outsoles in there just to give people the message that this shoe will be still be valid in 20 years' time.
Right, right, right.
And you can go get the thing resold because it is absolute timeless classic design. And, you know, I think a shoe like a Gazelle or a Stan Smith or an Italia, they'll still be valid in 30 Samba. Years' time. Exactly. You know, they'll still be valid in 40 years' time. And there's, you know, there's something about wearing those type of shoes that's kind of, there's just something cool about them, isn't there?
Soulful.
You know, like the term cool is, you know, if you only define cool, it's not breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're not trying too hard.
Literally.
You're not trying too
hard.
You just, you know, like, yeah, it's like, whereas, you know, you see that the guy who's like head to toe in all the latest hype products and it's like, oh, please.
There's a certain guy in the Adidas family who famously said, when you try hard, that's when you die hard. Mr. West.
Gary, can we talk about like, so, you know, the CP Company 50th anniversary. We are in Darwin right now, which a lot of people might not even know where this town is on the map. Like, what is the relationship? What's so special about the relationship between the town of Darwin and specifically in CP Company, not just the north, but like your hometown?
Well, Darwin sits in the borough of Blackburn.
Okay.
This is a very economically deprived area. It was, it's in the top 10, Blackburn's in the top 10 poorest towns in Europe.
Okay.
But once upon a time, the real estate in Blackburn was the most expensive in the country.
Oh, wow.
It was the hub of the textile industry globally. So to celebrate the history of this area, there's been a thing that's been created called the British Textile Biennial. And a couple of years ago, I got involved with that and we did an Adidas Spezial exhibition in Blackburn. Now, bearing in mind, we've taken the Adidas Spezial exhibition to Moscow, we've taken it to Paris, we've had it in London, we've had it in Manchester. We never got a response like we got when we took it to Blackburn. It captured people's imagination.
Were you surprised? Or
I wasn't. Because, I mean, when I originally proposed the idea to some people inside the company,
Adidas legal team was like, "Mother, this motherfucker again."
It's like,
where the fuck?
So you want to do a marketing activation in one of the poorest towns in Europe? Good idea, Gary. Yeah. See you later.
How about that strong brand identity, chap?
Yeah. But I was determined to do it because I care about my hometown. I'm passionate about my hometown, and so I ended up saying, "Look, I've got 3,000 vintage Adidas shoes, and I'll get money from the Arts Council, and I'll do this exhibition. Whether you get involved or you don't, and Adidas UK were like, no, we want to get involved in this. We, we'll put some money behind it. And what was interesting about it was we made it a hub for a bunch of cultural events. So, you know, like I said, Tony Wilson used to talk about how culture needs hubs." Mm-hmm. You know, whether that be punk rock coming from Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood's shop on the King's Road, or Madchester coming from the Hacienda nightclub. You know, so what we did, we created a hub there for Adidas fans to get together. And that's real community.
Yeah.
It's not just a kind of, you know, a forum or a chat room. It's people from those forums meeting in real time.
It's not just an Instagrammable moment or whatever. Yeah, it's a real,
and, like, and, 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 there's, and, and, there's, there's, and there's And there's not many brands that can do an exhibition like that. Adidas is one of them. CP Company is another one of them, which will, you know, and we have people flying from the US. We have people flying from all over Europe. Mm-hmm. We have people flying from Asia to come to Blackburn. And it's like, you know, it was a radical thing to do, but it was massively, massively successful. In 10 days, we had like 21,000 people through the door. It raised a lot of money for a local homeless charity in Nightsafe. So kind of like we had the blueprint there.
Sure.
And then the pandemic happens.
Yeah.
And so there was no British Textile Biennial last year. And then this year, it's like, Can we get one again in October? Because it was all a little bit touch and go because of the COVID situation. I'd been talking to CP Company about the jacket and the collaboration, the shoes, and they'd said we're considering doing exhibitions in Hong Kong, Milan, and London. I said, please, not London, Darwin,
anywhere but London,
Darwin or Blackburn. And they were like, the thing was, 4 years ago, they kindly invited me to be in a film called Eyes on the City, mm-hmm. which is on YouTube. And they were sort of asking different creatives to represent different cities. Mm-hmm. And they'd come to me because they wanted me to represent London. And I...
Were you living in London at the time?
Yeah, I have a house in London. I have a house here.
Okay.
So...
Little pied
so,
there.
So basically, I said, I'm really flattered to be asked to do this and I'd love to do it, but it wouldn't be an honest story if it was just me in London because my connection to CP Company comes from Lancashire.
From the north,
And you get called up by your homies.
So we come up here and Lorenzo Hosty turns around to me and says, is this staged? Like everybody is wearing CP Company, teenage kids, grandmothers. Like but they saw a significant
granny
number
in the goggles.
I'm kidding. But they had a significant number of people wearing. They witnessed it themselves, and I think they went back to Italy with that memory.
Right.
So when they talked about doing the exhibition in London, I said, you do it in London, but it's kind of. It's just another brand event where a lot of hipsters turn up and have a free drink and
fucking hipsters,
or whatever, you know, and
for a slider.
And I'm like, you know, like if you do something here, yes, it's a post-industrial area. Yes, it's economically deprived, but you know what? It'll be meaningful.
It'll matter. Mm-hmm.
It'll mean and
yes, Enrico has to stay at a highway hotel.
Yeah,
but
and you know, and when you think about the philosophy of Massimo Osti, the founder of CP mm-hmm. Company. It's just so in keeping.
Right.
It's just
a bullseye
so
thing, yeah.
And you know, people are like, how have you convinced CP Company to come here? I'm like, they didn't take any convincing.
Right.
They got it right away. And
kudos
so
them.
Yeah.
And so I was like, there's a thing, we have the British Textile Biennial. Since we did the Adidas exhibition, the Textile Biennial and the local council here have been saying, you know, can we do something else? What can you make
They've
happen?
Been fiending, yeah.
Yeah, because I've been saying to them, you know, like they're like, how can we regenerate this area?
Right.
And I'm sure you've got these areas in the US as well, you know, like, and I'm like, culture. Mm. Culture is essential to regeneration. Like, if you look at Manchester, it's regarded as the number two city in the UK.
Sure.
Mancunians would say they're number one. but it doesn't have the second biggest population.
Okay.
The reason for that is because of culture.
Sure.
Manchester is a cultural hub.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was recently that thing of, you know, the best cities in the world to live in. San Francisco was number one, Amsterdam number two, Manchester was number three.
Yeah. Crazy.
London was 13.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Fuck and em. So culture needs hubs. But the thing about culture is if you break the word culture down, it comes from two words.
Call.
Cultivate. Easy. Let me finish. Don't interrupt. Cult.
Class in session.
Cultivate and nurture.
Oh, okay.
That's where the word culture is, our origins are. What CP Company are doing here is they're further cultivating the relationship they have mm-hmm. with this area and this country, but they're also nurturing their existing audience.
Right.
Mm. Instead of
Which
going, you know what,
town.
We need to expand. We need to kind of, right. we need to hit the hype kids. We sure. need to get the, you know, we need to be nah. reselling.
The biggest, shiniest store in London or whatever.
Yeah, no, there's these fam. People who've loyally followed and supported our brand for decades now. And maybe the roots of that come from, you know, young shoplifters going, traveling to Europe. But that, and maybe that's how it was introduced to this area.
CP Comedy's finally getting paid back, man.
Yeah, and the thing about, but the thing is also, you've got the element of the guys who are my age who are like old school casuals who were there last night wearing the vintage pieces.
Sure.
But you've got this whole new subculture, which are young kids, teenage kids. They're wearing technical sportswear, predominantly black, a little bit of grey moral maybe. CP Company, they're all into working out. They're all like, which is not training. A very British thing to do.
Right.
They're all really into the gym.
Besides curling pints.
They're into heavy techno. It's like, it's you know, they've got the kind of barbershop haircuts.
Oh, yeah. They're faded as fuck.
You know, like my, exactly.
Your kid had one of the best fits last night.
Yeah.
We both
were marking on his cords. Great corduroys.
Yeah. And the gilet or the vest.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was wearing the iTour 3 sweatshirt. Yeah. But my son's got this kind of strange mix because my son is a skater.
Oh, nice.
So he's into skating.
Hence the baggy ass pants. There you go.
Yeah. But he's also like for years, like I used to kind of dress him like a mini me. And now he kind of comes home and he's getting his own style now.
Sure. Some,
like, you know, I go shopping with him and he'll pick things up and I have to kind of bite my lips sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm sort of like last week we were at, I'm not going to name the brand, but he picked some jeans up and I was like, get them if you want some, but don't wear them when we go up north.
Yeah, right.
But he laughs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, he has this kind of like mix between, you know, these two different
generational thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Does
he ever roast your style?
Yeah.
No, he doesn't actually.
He thinks you're cool.
I'm doing all right. I've got him to the age of 14 and he hasn't kind of abandoned me yet.
You're about to jump into the abyss.
Yeah. No. James Lavelle once said to me, he said, it's awful. He said, my daughter's now like 15 years old. And when I go to collect her from school, she tells me to wait to the end of the street.
You look like a nerd.
Yeah. But he's cool.
Does
with
he
my
ever
style.
Put you onto any like dope shit, anything that like he sees and then he introduces it to you?
Well, not clothing wise. It's more to do with things
you're still the Jedi in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, like he follows things on YouTube and stuff, you know, like, so in some ways he's a good way to kind of a good barometer for what's going on.
Stay connected.
Cause I'm an older guy. You know what I mean? I'm an older guy. And like, I have an instinct for things that I follow, but like I don't think it's my job to have my finger on the pulse.
Is he showing you how the kids on TikTok are dressing, and how do you feel about that?
I don't really have an opinion on that. I'm gonna stay neutral there.
You could dust off the old dancing skills and become a TikTok star.
The thing about it is, it's a broad church. It's whatever makes you happy.
Yeah,
you know
sure.
what I mean? Like I say, I like the idea of there being diversity in subcultures and localized subcultures. I don't like the idea of homogenized global
flattened culture.
Yeah, just where like, you know, you can go to a brand launch in a store in London and you'd see exactly the same thing that you'd see in a brand launch in a store in LA.
Painting by numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. There's no fun in that. There's no interest in that for me.
Well, it's not your own identity. It's you just kind of like buying into the identity that's been produced for you.
Yeah.
You got it.
Been sold to you, really.
You got it. And that's the thing about casual culture. Like, the people who are into it are very protective of it. Because it's almost like if you try and market hard at that, they just walk.
Smell the bullshit.
They just walk. You know, what I do with Spezial is very nuanced. It's very nuanced. You know, like those, when I talk about like a folk music soundtrack, John Power was a member of the Lars. Lars were like a very, very important band in Liverpool. Liverpool's a very important place when it comes to British street fashion. Do you know what I mean?
It's all intentional, like you said, very
because that's what casual culture is. It's our streetwear.
Yeah.
It's our streetwear. You know, the streetwear, there's the kind of streetwear with a capital S, which is born out of skate culture and born out of the whole Harajuku thing in Tokyo and the hype thing. And I'm fluent in that world. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got friends, you know, I know Hiroshi, I know Kazuki, I know Shin from Neighbor. I know those guys, you know what I mean? And like, I'm fluent in that world, but I, like I say, it's, and I dip into it, you know, I wear a little bit of Viz more, you know, like, but I'm, I'm sort of
big fucking flex alert.
Is that a flex?
Yeah, Viz is very expensive.
Yeah, okay. All right. So is Brunello.
Yes, but, it is.
Yeah.
Mamma mia.
But the thing is with me, with brands, I select certain pieces that work for my,
it's called having personal styles. We're literally talking about
the Gary style, not, right. You know, the style that you're just, again, painting my numbers, like, or accepting what is being presented to you.
Yeah.
As a giant cultural historian that is able to connect all these dots and knows like the through lines that have brought us to this point in time,
the DNA,
who are some British style icons that have always inspired you?
Oh my God.
We asked Goldie this question too. And it's interesting to,
the style icons that influenced me were not famous.
Okay.
They were people that I grew up around. Like that was what was interesting for me when I studied and got a degree and, my course was fashion based and very graphic based, you know? So I have a design degree. You know, when I started doing Spezial, they were like, you know, but you're not a designer. I'm like, well, I have, Massimo Osti was a graphic designer.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm Massimo Osti, but you know, like, but what I'm saying is if you know about design, you can apply those processes to other things. But I said to Adidas, it's not a designer you need. It's a curator. Mm. I have a deep brand knowledge, so I know which elements to pick out of that. Right. But if I was to talk about the people that were my style icons, like I say, I went to college and I moved to London. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, when you go to fashion college, they tell you to read all the fashion magazines and you get there and then you meet the people who are behind the magazines and you think,
this guy sucks.
Fucking knobhead, dude.
No, but some of them, I'm like, you know, like, how can you tell, like how are you dictating people's style? You don't even know how to dress yourself.
Things aren't that much different nowadays.
Yeah, but it was kind of disappointing, you know, and then I know guys who were, you know, like who are working class guys who work in as tradesmen.
That are getting fits off like crazy.
You get me? So, there were these guys who were like, a few years older than me growing up, like there's a guy from Manchester, Benji Reed. Benji Reed was a member of a crew called Broken Glass. They were Manchester's original B-boy crew. He's for me, as far as body popping goes, he's the greatest body popper I've ever seen.
Oh, shit.
And, you know, but every time I would see Benji, I'd just be like, there's moments, even now, you know, I remember that in the Hacienda in Manchester, they did a hip hop all day. You don't hear a lot about this. In 1986, it was the first hip-hop all-dayer in Manchester. And I remember Benji Reed showing up there, and I can remember everything he was wearing to this day, you know, and that's how much of an impression it
had.
Like, you know, I was saying at that panel last week about the first time I saw Derek Turnbull in a Milli Milia goggle jacket. It was like one of those moments, you know. Benji walks into Hacienda. He's got a short red duffel coat on. He's got baggy cords, similar to what my son was wearing last night. He's wearing a pair of green Adidas Gazelles. He's got a denim shirt that's untucked, and you know, he's got his glasses on a string, and he just looks killer,
right?
You know, and there was another time at the Tropicana Club, and he walks in, and he's got his Burberry rain hat turned inside out with a brim pulled up, and you know, like. And he's got, you know, the Burberry jacket, and you know, like, and I remember kind of like, just moments growing up.
Like seared into your
brain. Yeah, you'd walk through the Arndale Centre and you'd see two kind of, you know, Jamaican kids from Moss Side where like head to toe in Burberry with like, you know, carrying walking sticks or just like golfing umbrellas. Just looking, just killer, you know. And they're the people who I look at and I go, yeah, you know.
That's what's informing. That's what's influencing or informing you a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's more.
Real people. Yeah, real street fashion.
Absolutely, you know, and
not
like,
the celebrities, not the men, not the glossies.
No, not real yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are, with casual culture, most of the bands that we listened to in the 80s didn't look like us. They didn't look like the audience. It was only when the Happy Mondays and the Stone Roses appeared that you started to get bands that actually looked like the audience. Mm. I mean, I was over the moon that Sean Ryder and Bez from the Happy Mondays
were there last night.
Because to me, I remember when the Happy Mondays first came out and friends of mine would say to me, like, there's this band from Manchester and they were gazelles. And it was like,
we don't care what they sound like.
Yeah. They wear the shoes that we wear and they got the haircuts that we've got. And that was, and you know, and in
it's
some
an added
ways,
bonus that they were good.
And you know, but the Happy Mondays, like they had like record company guys coming up from London and saying to them, yeah, but you know, the thing with you guys is you sound all right, but you need to get an image. And they're like, get an image, like
fuck off, knobber.
This is the image. So it's
Gary, I need to ask, man. You're an avid collector, an avid hunter gatherer of, you know, reference, whether it's you know, reference pieces or just stuff that you need to have because it touches your soul in some way. Your personal archive is the stuff of legend. How many pieces are in your personal archive?
Well, I don't count them, but I always say roughly 3,000 pairs.
Good, give or take.
Yeah, and but also there's a bunch of other stuff in there now because I have an archive of apparel that I've used for reference for Especial.
Yeah.
So I'm always picking up apparel references, you know, and I've got things in there like, you know, I remember in like doing the track jackets for the Beastie Boys tour and they were all personalized track jackets and they all signed them. And I have a full set of every one of those, you know, so I've got a bunch of stuff in there, but it's about 3,000 pairs of shoes. But the thing about it is I could have a lot more than that in the position I'm in.
Right.
But it's kind of like I'm selective about what I put in there.
You're curating.
Because well, because it's like, you know, it cost me a fortune in storage.
Yeah. So as a gauche American, I must ask, what is the most you've ever spent on a pair on a single pair of sneakers?
Nothing too crazy. Probably I paid £450 for a pair of Adidas waterproof.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, I don't ever spend crazy money, especially being in the position I'm in, because I'm surrounded by shoes all day. And yeah, I have
you're sick of it.
I'm never sick of it.
Let's, but you know, loafers.
I was an employee for Adidas for 10 years. I've been self-employed for, you know, nearly 13 years. I've been with Adidas in different capacities for nearly 23 years. I've been surrounded by shoes. I've watched this thing morph into what it, the phenomena that it is now. And, you know, I never intended to collect. I just used to keep things that for posterity or stuff that I liked. And then I'd put them in my mum's attic. And then before I know it, my mum's attic's full. And then I'm like, that's because, you know, space is a premium in London. You know, I didn't have a house back then. I just had a little apartment. And so I accrued shoes over the years just from projects I worked on.
Right.
And then when I first joined Adidas, this is interesting. Well, I think it's interesting. You might not. But when I first joined Adidas, there wasn't an originals division.
Mm. Right.
So they would, you know, you go to the global marketing meeting and they'd be like, this is a sports brand. This is not a fashion brand. And then the originals division came along and it was a very small range. I worked on the global launch of Adidas Originals with a Face magazine in London. And so I worked on entertainment for Adidas, Entertainment Promotions, it was called then. And then it went to non-athletic promotions. But back then, the only people that Adidas paid were athletes, sports people. Our currency was product and relationships. So I employ some of my old skills from the 90s. Mm. I kind of had to get my hustle on. Mm. So what I would do is I'd go to the Adidas sales force and say, hey, do you know any small independent sports shops that are sitting on old stock? Oh, yeah, we got this, you know, this one up in Kentish Town here. Do you think they want to swap it for new stock? Oh, I'm sure they'd love to.
Yeah.
So I'm in the basements of these sports shops, digging old stuff. Yeah, and then I fill the, I had a couple of like cupboards in the office that I would just fill with vintage stuff. So someone like Noel Gallagher or JK from Jamiroquai, they'd be like, I don't care about getting a free pair of shoes.
Yeah.
I want that pair of shoes that no one else has got.
Right.
So I had these like cupboards of vintage shoes that, so people would be like, you got to go down the Adidas office. He's got these cupboards full of vintage. So I would go out of my way and spend time and energy finding vintage stock.
Right.
And through that vintage stock, built better relationships with these people. And then as Adidas started to grow and the range started to get bigger, it was kind of like, you know, it's in many ways it's easier nowadays, but back then, like, it was finding products, you know, and Adidas at the time, they were still making stuff under license in Argentina. Mm-hmm. They were still making stuff under license in South Korea. So it was like, I'd go to global marketing meetings and I'd be racing around trying to find anyone from a licensee country. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, oh, you're from Adidas Argentina. Do you like Oasis?
Yeah.
I can, if you can send me a couple of boxes of those kind of Adidas Questars, I'm going to get you a signed gold disc.
Right, right.
And like, and so because there were no systems inside the company for me to be able to buy those products. So it was all,
I had to sort of exchange and
trade. So like,
borrowing steel.
Like in Tokyo back then, the only place you could get Superstar Ones on the planet, Tokyo. Yeah. You speak to Clark Kent, he always talks Superstar One. It's got to be the thin tongue. Yeah. Superstar Ones. That was the only place you could get them. The only place you could get Stan Smith Ones, Tokyo. Mm. So I had a relationship with the guys in Tokyo. I would go over to Fuji Rock and then the guys in Tokyo, I'd be like, can you send me some Stan Smith Ones and some Superstar Ones? And yeah, to some people, it's just a Superstar. It's just a Stan Smith. But to people who are...
Who know. If you know, you know.
It's like, oh my God, he's got the ones with Stan's face on the tongue. So it was kind of, you know, I was having to kind of hustle to get these products because product was, like I say, aside from relationships, product was the only currency.
Yeah.
When it goes to your personal archive with apparel, is there a grail piece that you have never managed to yet hunt down?
A white whale of sorts?
On the apparel side, I mean, it would be nice to have a vintage A15 leather tracksuit.
Mm.
That would be nice. I mean, they reissued the A15 many years ago.
But you want an OG.
And it would be nice to, because the funny thing with that-
You gotta rework those Argentinian connections.
Yeah, right.
Well, an interesting story with that one. Again, I think it's interesting. The A15, I remember in the early 2000s when the originals division first started, I was like, you got to do the leather tracksuit again. And they were like, leather tracksuit? And I'm like, the leather tracksuit. They went away. They looked through all the catalogs. They came back. They said, there's no such thing. I was like, believe me, there is.
If you were around
hip hop in the 80s, you'll know they existed. Run DMC one. Well, they're not in any of our catalogs. The reason they weren't in any of the catalogs is because they were a US thing.
Mm.
And so I then had to try and find one. And then there's a guy, he's an artist from the UK called Ina, E-I-N-E. Quite a famous artist now. But Ina used to go into a Levi's shop where my girlfriend at the time worked, who's selling vintage Levi's. And he came in and he's wearing an A15. Yeah, and she was like, my boyfriend wants to meet you.
Yeah. And Stay right here.
And he came in the office and... he agreed to let me photograph it, but he said, we have to make a gentleman's agreement that this reissue will not be the same. There'll be some differentiation between the reissue and my jacket. So I was like, all right. So the first leather tracksuit that Adidas did was not a one-for-one of that.
Have you seen another one?
And then I met a guy from Scandinavia who had one.
Okay.
And he was like, do it one-to-one, please, because I want another one. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, I kept my word with Ina. Yeah. I'll keep my word with you. So they did do a one-to-one of it, but it would be really nice to get a vintage one. But that's the beauty of the history, is the fact that, you know, I'm saying like about the A15 leather tracksuit, and they're just like, you know, they don't know because...
Yeah, never heard of
because
it.
Because a lot of product was made under license back then.
Yeah.
And I found, you know, and this is going back to what I'm saying about homogenized globalization versus localization. Sure. Brands want to get a globalized identity. Spezial is a very odd little kind of cul-de-sac of Adidas, really, mm-hmm. because it is quite regional.
Sure.
It is quite regional. It's pure. We did that amazing trip to Argentina as well. Yeah. Speaking about licensees,
great video if anyone wants to tap in and
soul searching awesome. In South America, which is quite funny because we did the original trip down there, and that was like
mind blowing.
Yeah, because also, but it was risky.
Yeah,
because we convinced Adidas to pay for our flights down there to take a film crew and a photographer.
You don't know what you're going to get.
We don't know what we're going to get. It could have been ice skates in those blue boxes. Could have been rugby boots.
Yeah.
I'll let you in on a little trade secret here. We had two huge old holes full of vintage shoes on that trip. Because I'm like, if we've got Adidas to pay for all these flights, we got to get a film out of this.
Sure.
We got in there. I don't think we're going to need these because it was off the scale.
Yeah.
Off the scale. And, you know, the whole story of that. And the funny thing was, when the film came out, people are going, oh yeah, it's just an Adidas marketing ploy. And like my business partner, Mikey, turned around and he was like, if this was a marketing project, we're the greatest marketeers on the planet to make it look that authentic.
Sure. Hollywood
and then,
magic.
And then you see the comments, typical bunch of northerners over stealing shoes from an old man in Argentina. And it's like, and I'm reading the comments and I'm thinking, yeah, you lot are all going to see, because we're going to make that guy his own signature shoe we're going to go back to Argentina and we're going to celebrate his story.
Yeah.
That story was incredible because it changed that guy's life.
I'm sure.
It changed that guy's neighborhood. He was in it was a kind of, you know, kind of rough around the edges in the suburbs of Buenos Aires. Do you know what I mean? Everybody in his neighborhood is proud now because they get visitors coming from all over the world to his store.
Incredible.
because of those films.
You created a cultural hub.
Yeah. And that's what we're doing here in Darwin.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to talk about this exhibition in Darwin for years to come.
Oh, we saw teenage kids just geeking out over the archive last night.
You could run for mayor.
if this whole Spezial thing doesn't work out for you.
Yeah.
Politics.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, as it happens, I've been invited onto a thing called the Darwin Town Deal Board.
There
so
you
I
go.
Sit with a member of parliament and the local council on that. And I'm sort of, when I first got involved in it, I thought, oh my God, this is a poison chalice because, you know, like, because I'm not a politician. I just care deeply about where I come from. And so,
unlike all politicians.
Yeah, unlike every other politician.
But it's, you know, but it's time consuming, but it's something that could make a huge difference here.
And
because I'm usually the guy who stands on the sideline criticizing and pointing fingers. And when they kind of came knocking on my door and said,
they said, don't talk about it, be about it, Gary.
Yeah. Do you want to have a voice here?
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I'll do it. And so sometimes I'm kind of like sit on these Zoom meetings going, oh, but you know, like, but I'm talking to him about Darwin and about looking at the town almost like you look in the way you build a brand.
Yeah,
you look at the town in the same way and thinking, what does Darwin represent? Darwin was the birthplace of professional football globally. You drive into Darwin, there's a big sign saying Darwin is a breastfeeding friendly town. I'm like, do breastfeeding unfriendly towns exist? What does that mean?
Wait,
like, and there's
that's
no
the town, there, that's the tagline.
There's no
titties for all.
There's no messaging anywhere to say this is the birthplace of professional football. That Houdini performed here. Charlie Chaplin performed here. Gandhi visited here.
Wow.
Like, Darwin had the biggest, you know, the Indian Mill chimney, which is where Gandhi visited. That chimney is the biggest in the country. Like, Darwin's got this like really rich history, you know.
Like, tap into it.
Yeah. People here, there was, you know, in my ancestors, it was a cotton famine.
Right.
It was the people of Lancashire that refused to work with cotton that came from slaves. They went hungry.
Wow.
To do that. If you go into Manchester, there's Lincoln Square. There's a statue of Lincoln in the center of Manchester because he acknowledged the people of Lancashire, the mill workers of Lancashire, for part
the right thing
in the abolition of slavery.
Wow.
That's the ancestry
of
this place.
The right hill to die on.
Yeah. I mean, your passion for Darwin is obviously like tangible, right? And Lawrence and I, we spent a week up here in the north. We haven't been, you know, we went to Heathrow. Whatever, it's an airport, right? The rest of the time, we feel like the Mancunian culture, we fucking love it. We love it up here. If we were to go, and our time here is coming to a close, we want to take some northern slang back to the US and try to like import it on your guys' behalf.
What's
like
cool.
What's some northern slang that you think we could like try and make pop off in the US?
Yeah.
Oh God, no.
Nigel taught us skadoosh, right?
But that's his own thing, I think.
Oh yeah, I guess that's just him and his
skadoosh.
Like, get the fuck out of here.
I think it's his own personal thing.
Yeah, that's definitely
No, I'm not claiming that.
That's some Geordie shit.
Yeah.
Is there some Darwin or northern slang that like
I can't think of one. I can't think. There surely will be, but yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's anything I can repeat on a podcast.
That's fair.
We are notorious.
He's trying to save his job.
Yeah. All right. Last question before we get into some.
Oh yeah, a lamp.
A lamp. What's a lamp?
A scruffy lamp.
What's a scruffy lamp?
It's a scruffy lamp.
What is that?
It's somebody who doesn't dress very well.
A swagless homie.
Yeah, a scruffy lamp. No, it's somebody who thinks they can dress well.
But doesn't
particularly dress well. It's like, he's a scruffy.
The scruffy lamps in publishing.
I didn't say everybody that works in magazine. My career in PR just ended in one fell swoop.
You're welcome.
Gary, you are homies with the god Noel Gallagher. Let's settle this debate once and for all. Who has better style, Noel or Liam?
Yeah, this is a loaded question.
That's a really loaded question.
Because you know, whoever you don't say is going to call you up and come to Darwin.
Because the Gallagher brothers are going to listen to Throwing Fits.
Hey, man.
I thought you two were my mates. You're just trying to stitch me up here, aren't you?
We came over to the UK.
Yeah. We experienced your hospitality, and then we got you to fall out with your friends. And then we jumped on a plane at Heathrow and said, bye! No.
Back to the scuzzy lamps.
Do you think Noel's style is underrated because of how much shine Liam gets because he's the front man?
I don't think either of them have got underrated styles, to be honest.
Okay.
I think,
properly rated.
Noel's style has kind of changed as he's got older. As all of our styles.
I think he's gotten more stylish, I feel like, to be honest.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, it's kind of, you know, like I think back to, because a lot of dress and style is about context.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm talking about kind of kids from Moss Side walking through the Arndale Centre wearing kind of Burberry or Aquascutum, you know, like that was about context.
Right.
They were kids who were coming from housing estates or tower blocks or terraced houses, taking something that was not intended for them, not targeted
way above their
them,
pay grade.
And reappropriating. And there's something very subversive about that. But the interesting thing is, like, as you get older, these things that you could recontextualize when you were a teenager.
You can't anymore.
It's like, well, you know, when you're 17 and you were in old men's clothes, it looks kind of cool.
Youth
but then when you get
there,
older and you wear old men's clothes, you just like an old man.
Yeah. Or even worse, the old man wearing a young man's clothes.
You don't want that.
You look like a scruffy lamp.
But then you get I love the sort of Italian style. I love understated Italian style. But then it's the same in Italy though. You have the very chic understated end of it, and then you also there's those kind of look at me people that you get as well. They're everywhere, aren't they?
Conspicuous dressers.
Some gauche ass motherfuckers.
Yeah. That's what we say. Scuzzy lamp ass.
You two just came here to kind of gather insults to say,
yes.
Hey, New York, check what we brought back for you. We went to UK and we came back with all these great new insults for you. We've got all kinds of kind of foul mouth language for you.
We are transparent, and that was the purpose
what
of
did
the
Goldie,
entire trip.
Goldie called, us, Goldie called us some fuzzy twats or something.
I don't
like,
know what he, it was. He was tired. It was a barrage of insults.
Gary, you are an unimpeachable legend. Mm-hmm. The things you're doing with Spezial and the CP Company collaboration and Darwin are fucking, you know, second to none. That being said, we are two, loud, oafish Yanks here in the old country, and we want to give you some constructive criticism. Whether you want it or not, we're going to give it to you because we're American.
I have an Instagram account, so I get them all the time. Just my opinion, mate.
Yeah.
Did I ask for that?
Right.
No. Go on. I'll give you that because you've been amusing.
Take it or leave it.
Thank you.
We highly suggest you take it. I'll go first, then Lawrence will go and wrap it up. Dita Spezial, you know, you're obviously killing it. Every single drop, every single season is just fucking next level. Lawrence and I were big loafer guys.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we team up and let us design the first ever Adidas Spezial loafer?
Well, it wouldn't be the first ever because we've already done, we do leisure shoes.
Really?
So I'm one step ahead of you there, mate.
Have you done
that? But if you're asking for a slip-on, you've no chance. It's got to have laces in it.
It's got to have laces in it.
We can't do no slip-on loafers.
Okay.
But, you know, Adidas did a range in the sort of late 70s, early 80s called Fryzite, which is a probably a very bad pronunciation of a German word for me there, but it's a German word for free time.
Okay.
And they did these kind of, they're like kind of, you know, like root shoes,
like,
you know, like
I think you called them in a video substitute teacher or like,
yeah, like geography teacher.
Yeah,
shoes.
Geography teacher.
Yeah, the, you know, but
that or a rude boy.
Yeah, that kind of
geography.
That kind of hippie meets rude boy meets casual.
I majored in geography. Let's connect the dots.
Yeah, here. But this is the thing, you know, and there was a thing like at that time it was like corduroys with those type of shoes, and it's about context.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But I've a lot of those shoes from the original Frieseite range. They haven't really dated that well, but I've often designed them with Inspezia where I take elements of them and create new products, which are, you know, and I've done a number of leisure shoes now.
Okay.
You know, I did the Garwin, which was where we worked with Chris Gibbs at Union, and we a little Union collaboration on those.
A good friend of ours, he can vouch for us. Shout out, Chris.
Chris is a good guy.
Let's do a little role play.
Former guest of the pod.
Let's do a little role play. So I'm gonna play the part of Gary Aspin, and you're gonna play the part of Adidas, just C-suite executive levels. You know, all right, guys, we just wrapped up the CP company collaboration. It was a fucking smash. Sold out everything. Next collaboration, why don't we do a collaboration with a podcast I know?
Yeah.
What do you think the suits at Adidas are going to say?
You're fired.
They probably say, is it based in Blackburn?
I guess so. No slip-ons. We're not going to do a loafer. It's got to have laces. Just hanging out with us. I mean, we obviously met before the pod. The pod's been going great. But after like, you know, about an hour and a half now with us, what do you think a Throwing Fits pro model sneaker with Spezial would look like?
Well, I've never done a basketball shoe in Spezial.
So maybe it's that.
I've never done that. I wouldn't be closed to doing something that relates to basketball at some point if it felt right.
Interesting.
You know, the thing with what I do is, I follow instinct. I follow instinct. A lot of the time, and this is part of the problem when you work inside big companies, it's very difficult to do things that are visionary because if you have to get five people to sign off on it and it's never been done before, then there's nothing to compare it to.
And they're very risk averse.
Yeah. You know, like I've learned a lot from Peter Saville. I've worked with Peter Saville on a few projects. I worked with him on the Adicolor project, which if you see a shoe that he did for Adicolor and then look at the work that Virgil Abloh does, you'll see like where a lot of Virgil's thing came from. The Peter Saville Adicolor from 2006. Go have a look at that.
Okay.
And then I worked on a Hacienda collaboration with him and Ben Kelly. But one of the things Peter said to me was that when he worked for Factory Records and he designed the sleeve for Unknown Pleasures for Joy Division, he said that he didn't put a track listing on the sleeve. Now, if that had been at a major record label, they'd have gone, there's no track listing on this record.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's,
something.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't want to put a track listing on because I want the object to be beautiful.
Yeah, of course. Art.
Now you can so Factory Records went,
sure,
do it. And now that's like a revered album cover. Now, so it's very difficult to get things off the ground that are visionary when you've got to get like lots of people sign off on it.
Yeah.
So one of the challenges of big companies. Yeah. One of the things where I'm in an advantageous position with Adidas is they trust me.
Yeah.
They've seen that consistently over over two decades worth of work.
You don't miss.
I've got a pretty strong kind of, resume of stuff that I've worked on.
Your batting average.
Well, your hardest sell of all time, if you really want to test yourself, might be pitching.
You're looking for a challenge.
Yeah. But this is what I'm saying about instinct. Sometimes you can't explain why something is. It just is.
I mean, instinct telling you to...
But that's what I'm saying.
Trying to make it about us
I know you're trying, but I'm batting you off. I'm batting you off.
You're using your circular British talk.
It's kind of like, it's just got to instinctively feel right.
Sure.
Right. And you know, like...
Maybe there will be a time.
Who knows?
You
never know how down on your luck you'll be.
No, but you asked me the question earlier, what's the most you spent on a pair of shoes? It doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't actually matter. Mm-hmm. You know, and there'll be people out there, you get a pair of Nikes that are worth 50 grand. Whatever. I don't care.
Right.
I don't care about that. You know, like Tony Wilson used to say, you know, it's not about making money, it's about making history.
Ooh,
and I think it's a, and you know, because Factory Records was a financial disaster.
Yeah.
It was a financial disaster, but you know, look at the influence that it's left. Look at the legacy that it's left. It made a difference.
Yeah.
It influenced culture. It's a cultural reference point.
How accurate is 24-hour party people?
Do you know what? I went to the cast and crew screening of that wanting to hate it.
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to hate it is because in the original script, there was a scene set in Blackburn.
Okay.
Where Bernard Sumner and Tony Wilson go to an acid house party in Blackburn.
Right.
Which never actually happened. Bernard Sumner did come to acid house parties in Blackburn.
But Tony never went.
I don't think Tony did. I'm not sure. I never saw him there, though. But I know Bernard definitely was there.
Right.
But, you know, like, and their researchers contacted me before it because they wanted to get information to shoot that. And then that scene never made the final cut.
Okay.
And in some ways it's typical of the Blackburn Acid House scene, because the Blackburn Acid House scene was parties for the people, by the people.
Right.
When
parties without profit.
Parties without profit. Any money that was made from those parties went back into the local community.
Right, right, right.
I remember like one of the early Blackburn Acid House parties in 1988. They paid for riding lessons for kids at a school in Blackburn.
Crazy.
Like they paid, you know, and that was all the profit from the, and it was a way of saying this is not about money for us.
Right, right, right.
And the week after, in the local newspaper, they had the headmaster of the school tearing the check.
Oh shit! They didn't accept the money.
We don't want their money. Yeah, wow. Because it was so demonized at the time. But that was a, you know, that spirit of 1988. Was, you know, that's part, when I talk about identity, that's part of the thing that's informed me and informs what I do.
Sure.
You know, like, everybody wants to have a comfortable lifestyle, but you know, it's like, you know, if that's all it's about?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like there's bigger things going on in the world. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely.
Without kind of getting on a soapbox, but
no,
it's like, you know, like,
this is a great way.
You know, like people need to start thinking about like sustainability. And
I mean, we're at the portion now where Gary, you can plug whatever you want.
I don't have anything to plug.
Earth and sustainability.
I don't have anything to plug. But you know, like I say, I hate the idea of something that I care deeply about being reduced to just a sort of a financial exercise.
Right.
It just doesn't, and don't get me wrong. I like, you know, I like business. I like, you know, I like having a nice lifestyle. But it's kind of like,
It's more than that.
It's bigger. It's bigger than business, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Gary, thank you for coming on.
We appreciate your time,
Matters. Dropping bars front to back. Chef, hit us with that outro music.